Washington, D.C.
Welcome to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles. You're listening to the 4 o'clock hour called Voices from the Frontlines. My name is Manuel Criollo. Today's show, we will dedicate our show on the upcoming presidential recall vote on Sunday, August 15th, against the popularly elected Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez. First, we will have Deborah James from the Venezuelan Information Office on the Venezuelan Bolivarian process and the significance of the upcoming presidential referendum. Second, we'll have William Bloom, author of various books, you know, books like Rogue State and Killing Hope. He'll be talking about the National Endowment for Democracy and the role of the U.S. inside Venezuela. And lastly, we'll have Joel Tena, member of the Venezuelan Solidarity Group. We'll talk about the ongoing work of solidarity groups throughout the United States for the Bolivarian Revolution. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. On Sunday, August 15th, the South American nation of Venezuela will be engaging in a very unique presidential referendum vote. The voting population of Venezuela will be voting a simple yes or no on the question, should the popularly elected Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez Frias should continue his presidential term? This upcoming vote is a test for many forces, but particularly for the revolutionary government of Hugo Chavez, and also forces in the United States, ranging from the Bush administration to exiled Cuban and Venezuelan groups inside the United States, and even for the so-called democracy-promoting U.S. institutions such as the National Endowment for Democracy. But I think what's really up for grabs in this upcoming recall vote is three things that we should think, particularly folks here in the United States. One, is a nation really sovereign and free to vote their conscience in a U.S.-led imperialist system, especially in Latin America, which has been for centuries, for many people in the United States, both among elite and I would say even among working class people, as their backyard. You know, I just recently was in El Salvador in the March elections out there, the presidential elections, and we saw the power of the United States of intimidating and bullying a whole population around a result for an election. Second, you know, the difficult position that national liberation movements and governments around the world are put in, having to engage and resist direct destabilization and regime changes plans from the U.S. government. In other words, they have to play by the rules all the time for fear of being pictured as authoritarian and not democratic. Yet, you know, when the U.S. backs, you know, ruthless right-wing governments, you know, it's cheered on and praised by the U.S. media. The irony here is that, you know, the Venezuelan Revolutionary Bolivarian government amended the Constitution in 1999 to put in the books a presidential referendum clause, which the opposition, after its failed coup against Chavez in 2002, have used. And it's been abated by the United States government. And so we see, and also through the interference of the NEED, which has pumped over $1 million to anti-Chavez group. So, and lastly, you know, what is the role of folks here in the United States? You know, when you think about history in El Salvador, when we look at the history of El Salvador, in particular the revolutionary process in El Salvador, there was a third front inside the United States, led by CISPES, led by religious organizations, led by folks inside the Salvadoreño government who, you know, were struggling here inside the United States. And so today, you know, what we have is, you know, a whole show dedicated on Venezuela. And we have on the phone right now Deborah James from the Venezuelan Information Office, who's, you know, been sort of the voice of support for the Venezuelan government inside the United States. And she's going to talk to us about the process in Venezuela and also about the upcoming presidential referendum. Hello, Deborah. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks so much for having me today.
Sure. So, you know, let's back up a little bit just for folks here in Los Angeles and folks, I think, in general. I mean, outside of maybe the exposure many of have had with the movie, you know, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised, a lot of folks don't know about Venezuela and what's going on. You know, if we depend on the Washington Post, you know, or the Miami Herald, which, you know, is a very biased interpretation of what's happening in Venezuela. Could you sort of start of just saying who Hugo Chavez is and what's the process that's happening in Venezuela?
I'd be happy to. Thanks so much. Basically, Venezuela is the fifth largest oil exporter in the world. So it has some of the largest reserves of oil outside of the Middle East. And it's traditionally been considered a stable democracy, which means that two parties alternated power while marginalizing the vast majority of the population. So even though it was one of the richest oil countries in the world, about 80% of people lived in poverty. You have very high illiteracy rates. People don't have access to health care, so on. So what happened is that they had very high income from oil in the 1970s and 80s, but at the end of the 80s, there was instituted an International Monetary Fund imposed a structural adjustment plan, which basically caused, you know, a lot of people to get taken off their health care, you know, have problems with their economy, not be able to put food on the table, have to pay a lot more for their transportation. And that caused some of the very first IMF riots in the history of the world, and that was in 1989. And so this failed policy of, you know, what's widely referred to as neoliberalism or the Washington Consensus or the IMF World Bank structural adjustment that was forced on most of Latin America and many other developing countries throughout the 80s and 90s was very much rejected in Venezuela at that time. And so there was a movement growing of regular people, of peasants, of workers, of all kinds of people across the country who were very dissatisfied with that type of hyper-exploitative economic model. And so that led to the election by 56% of the population in 1999 of Hugo Chavez Frias, who was the son of school teachers from a rural town and had been in the military and had, you know, sort of developed his education and realized that what Venezuela really needed was a different economic model that rejected neoliberalism and the United States imposing its economic dictates. And so what really has been happening in Venezuela over the last 5 years has been a struggle between the forces of the overwhelming majority who believe that the national oil wealth should be fairly distributed among the whole population so that the regular people who live there can have access to things like land reform, education, healthcare, job training, instead of just the traditional elites getting all of the money out of the national oil wealth that's really a resource for everybody. So, of course, this has angered many of the traditional elites who are used to being able to get all the oil money for themselves and not have to share it equally with everybody in the country. And so they organized an illegal and deadly coup in 2002, which in dozens of people died. And as you know, Hugo Chavez was restored to office by a popular uprising where literally hundreds of thousands of people poured out into the street. It's one of the first coups against a democratically elected government ever in the history of the world where the president was restored by a popular uprising within 48 hours. And that was in April of 2002. And following that year, at the end of the year, they organized an illegal management-led work stoppage of the national oil company because the elites, again, wanted to hold on to all the income from it. And that cost the economy over $10 billion and actually caused the unemployment rate to raise almost 5% just in a couple of months. So it literally put thousands and thousands of people out of work and really just wreaked havoc on the economy. And so these were the two illegal extra-constitutional projects that the opposition to Hugo Chavez and the popularly elected government had engaged in. In the meantime, the popularly elected, democratically elected government had passed a new constitution that enfranchised all kinds of poor people, working class people, indigenous people, Afro-Venezuelans, to new sets of rights that they had never experienced before, including a participatory democracy that meant that everybody had the right and obligation to participate in the civic process. So it wasn't just a matter of the elites making policy, but it was about everybody in the country had the right and obligation to participate in the decision-making of what was going to happen with their nation. So that constitution is wildly popular in Venezuela. Many people, you know, carry their constitution around with them. They know it back and forth. It's a very, very important instrument that they have used to demand their rights. And so there's been a very much a popular awakening of empowerment that's happened with regular, you know, working class people, peasants, farmers, Afro-Venezuelans, women, indigenous people, workers that has happened over the last 5 years where they've really come to know and understand that they have rights, that they have things that they can demand of the government, and that they have an obligation and a right to participate in decision-making. So just recently then, the Organization of American States and the Carter Center were able to broker a deal between the government and the opposition, basically that just forced the opposition to acknowledge that they had been engaging in illegal extra-constitutional means to overthrow the democratically elected government, and that if they wanted to get rid of President Chavez, that they had to follow the Constitution to do it. And in the Constitution, the new one that was approved by 71% of the population in 2000, it includes a very unique provision in the whole world, which is a provision for a recall against any elected official. And so in the fall last year, they organized a petition drive in order to, you know, pass the constitutional requirements to have that recall. They have that petition saying they want to have a recall referendum. And there was mass fraud in that petition drive. Over 10% of the signatures were actually shown later. They were thrown out because they were signatures of dead people, of children, of minors, of foreigners, of all kinds of people who didn't, you know, weren't around to be signing, and that the opposition had got fraudulently mm-hmm. to sign their signatures. And so those were thrown out, but they did actually make the number that they needed, which is about 2.4 million to trigger a constitutional referendum. So the referendum, as you've already said, is set for next Sunday. It's going to be a week from today, and it will be the first referendum on a democratically elected president in the history of the world. And the exciting thing for us, I think, is that all of the polls, including the opposition polls as well as the government-funded polls, for the last several months have shown a clear victory that President Chavez will once again, for now the third time, receive the democratically elected mandate of his people to continue governing. And this is a very, very big step back for the opposition. They have spent almost a year and a half organizing this referendum, and so you know, it's the first time they actually have tried through a constitutional democratic process to get the president out of office, and they're probably going to lose because they don't actually have the support of the majority of the population. They
Deborah,
are the traditional ruling elite.
Right. Could you describe what this opposition looks like? You know, who are they? What percentage would you sort of give in terms of real numbers of support for this opposition inside Venezuela?
Yes, of course. I mean, they're basically traditional elites. So they're, you know, the people who traditionally had access to all of the oil money of the country. It's predominantly the media. The media, you know, well over 90% of the media is controlled wholesale by the opposition. So you can imagine, you know, if during the impeachment process against President Clinton, if all of the media in the whole United States were owned by the Republicans, you know, it would have been a little bit different. I mean, it's a totally biased outcome. I mean, there's no way you can have a free and fair situation when the media is actually owned by the opposition, all of it, you know, by the private media, by opposition organizers. It includes certainly the business class, and it includes, you know, many people actually who participated in the coup of April in 2002, and unfortunately many of those people have never been prosecuted because there was an effort at reconciliation right after the coup to sort of try to come together around a national dialogue, and so many of those people were never prosecuted, which unfortunately means that they've been going out, you know, not only engaging in the referendum, which is a democratic activity, but surprisingly that they have been receiving even grants from the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a bipartisan, congressionally funded agency that is supposed to be promoting democracy. But what we've ended up happening now is that we have this National Endowment for Democracy by the United States funding coup leaders to organize a referendum against a democratically elected president, and it's supposedly in the name of democracy. And it just really is the most absurd situation you could possibly imagine, where the opposition is engaged in so many illegal tactics and strategies and tried everything they could and finally were forced by international mediators to follow a constitutional path, and all the while, some of these actors, like the people who were named the finance minister during the coup, the person who was named the education minister during the coup, and other, even somebody who signed actually the declaration of the coup government, which abolished all of the democratic institutions in the country, including the Supreme Court, you know, the legislature, the ombudsman, the you know, basically every institution that wasn't the executive, you know, and signed that decree, is the principal grant recipient of a grant from the NED to actually organize the electoral platform of the opposition. So you see, you know, very undemocratic activities happening, and they also have been calling for, one of the most important things I think to point out is that the opposition has made no commitments so far. There's not one opposition leader who has said that they will agree to abide by the results of the democratic referendum. So you know, they organized this referendum, but now the poll numbers come in and show that they might lose, and they're not willing to commit to abide by the results of it. Mm. Evidently, their NED funding hasn't taught them very much about democracy.
Mm. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 in Los Angeles and 98.7 in Santa Barbara. On the phone, we have Deborah James from the Venezuelan Information Office in D.C., who's talking about the upcoming presidential referendum. Well, Deborah, can you let's switch it up. I mean, I do think that the question around the role of the U.S., we're going to have William Bloom to speak on that issue. And I think it's sort of the mounting question, which as I opened up the show, you know, I was in El Salvador. And, you know, this question about how free can a populace really be in terms of, you know, the power and the dominant role that the U.S. has throughout the world, but in particular in Latin America. How is that being addressed? I mean, I know that, could you sort of talk about what have been some of the tactics inside Venezuela to organize sort of, you know, a popular movement in support of the government?
Certainly. Well, I mean, there is just a massive popular movement happening all across the country right now. There are so many, for example, you know, you take the missions that are happening, and this is the example of one of the only governments in the world that is a primary oil producer that's actually using its oil wealth. And any of you who have out there Citgo gas stations where you are, I mean, that's a Venezuelan company, and that's where the money is going, is to these missions that they've been working on to provide basic health care, education, food security, and land reform to millions of people across the country. So, for example, with the program called Barrio Adentro, which is the program to provide primary preventative health care, they're covering over 57% of the population right now. And what they do is that they put a community clinic in for every about 1,000 people in the country, and they're primarily Cuban doctors who are working there. And they do surveys in the community. So it's all these community workers who care about the health care of their neighbors, and they go around and do a survey to figure out what are their needs, what are their problems, what are their nutritional needs, do they have cleanliness, do they have sanitation, and then they go and develop educational programs to be able to prevent the type of illnesses that we see so common in poor populations across Latin America and the rest of the world that are preventable with just a very small investment of proper education around healthcare issues so that people can really have access to their human rights of healthcare, and that's done through these community-based clinics and volunteer organizations. You also have the situation with the literacy campaign, which is just an amazing, amazing situation where a government is actually using money from oil. When you go to that Citgo gas station, you know that then basically you're supporting a literacy campaign in Venezuela that has taught over 1 million adults how to read and write in the last year. So you look at a situation where, you know, historically the U.S. was friends with the democracy in Venezuela, and yet they left 1 million of their citizens in the dark without knowing how to read and write. And now there's a government that's engaged on this incredible literacy campaign to not only bring in those 1 million people who have now learned how to read and write, but continue them through an elementary school education. They have classes so that these people who have learned how to read and write can continue and get an elementary school equivalent. They also have a program called Misión Rivas that is for the recuperation of people who never had the opportunity to go to high school. And I'll just give you one particular example of a woman I happened to meet who was probably about in her mid-40s, and she told me an amazing story. And she said, you know, I had to quit school when I was in about eighth grade because in my family the boys got to go to school and I didn't get to go to school. And she was an Afro-Venezuelan woman. And she said, I've been a domestic all my life because I had to start working when I was really young so I could put my brothers through school and so I could pay the rent and everything. And now because of Misión Rivas and because of the president enabling, you know, this program to exist with the oil money, and because of the volunteers that work teaching in the program and the facilitators of the classes who are so dedicated to making sure that their fellow citizens have this access to education, she's going to get her high school equivalency degree. You know, she's been in the program for a while, so she's going to get it in about 6 months.
That's great.
And you can imagine the pride in this young woman's face who was so excited to be able to actually get her high school degree and become an educated person and be able to give something back, because she knows, shoot, if she gets that degree, maybe she'll go to college then in the college mission that's called Misión Sucre, to be able to provide education to working class students who didn't have access to the elite universities, but that she also has a very exciting to her obligation to give back to her community by helping other people who were not even as fortunate as her. So it's a tremendous amount of inculcation of the civic ideals of also participating and giving back to your community that's being born there. And that's really what's happening, is the social transformation of a society that's been traditionally controlled by oil money to really making sure that that oil money is used for the benefit of all in society. And you can imagine the type of reaction that that's caused in the Bush administration.
This is Manuel Criollo, and you're listening to Voices from the Frontlines. And on the phone, we have Deborah James from the Venezuelan Information Office. We're going to take a station break for a moment, and we'll be back with Deborah.
Latino gays and lesbians, sodomy, gay baby boom, transgender issues, hate crimes.
IMRU, 90.7 at 7 every Monday.
HIV, AIDS, civil rights.
We squeeze the entire gay and lesbian world into 57 minutes.
Sexuality, civil unions.
You don't want to miss one.
IMRU, 90.7 at 7, Monday nights.
Discrimination, breast cancer, equality.
Madre, en tu día, no dejamos de mandarte nuestro amor. Madre, en tu día, con las vidas construidas.
Hello again, this is Voices from the Frontlines. On the phone we have Deborah. Deborah, are you still there on the phone?
Yes.
Could you just give folks, I know you guys are going to send out delegations of folks to oversee the referendum vote. Can you talk about a little bit about that and then also your information on how people can contact you?
Certainly. Well, our website is www.veninfo, that's veninfo.org. That's for the Venezuela Information Office. Our phone number is 202-347-8081, and we're certainly happy to, you know, put anybody on our weekly listserv update about Venezuela issues. You can also get, we do a roundup every day of every news article in English about Venezuela with an analysis of them. It's one of the most important things is to really follow what the news media are reporting, because so many of them are so incredibly biased. And, you know, we do a lot of advocacy with journalists to try to make sure that they represent fairly what's the reality of what's happening in Venezuela. And so to that end, one of the things we're doing is we're facilitating a trip down to Venezuela this week for people across the country who are interested in participating and accompanying the Venezuelan people through this very important democratic precedent that's happening this coming Sunday with the referendum on the presidency of Hugo Chavez. And so we have about 20 people from across the country who will be coming down, you know, all different sectors, you know, students and teachers and, you know, all kinds of different professionals and people with, you know, working people, all kinds of different folks coming down who are just really interested in accompanying the Venezuelan people through this process to be able to see what's happening, understand what's going on, and then, you know, hopefully be able to come back to their communities and let more people know, you know, about what is actually going on in Venezuela. I mean, it's, you know, it's not in the news all the time, and most of the news you get is very biased. So, you know, it's been surprising to us, but even, you know, many people on the left who, you know, were very supportive of other social movements throughout history in Latin America and other countries and, you know, understand the dynamics of U.S. intervention and imperialism, you know, sometimes don't understand what's going on in Venezuela. And so we really want to be able to explain that and offer those resources to people and then, you know, providing this delegation so that folks who are really interested in taking a stand and declaring their support for the Bolivarian process that people are going through, which, you know, is so important about the redistribution of the national oil income. And another important thing that I'm sure your listeners would be interested in is the regional cooperation efforts of the Chavez administration. I mean, it's just been just incredible in the last couple of years to see they have been making agreements with the Caribbean countries and Central American mm-hmm. countries to give them preferential terms on oil access to make sure that they can have access to oil for their energy needs of their population. They have been having, you know, they just had really great cooperation agreement recently with Colombia on the terrorism issue. They just became or admitted to Mercosur, which is the common trade area of the Southern Cone, so primarily Southern Cone countries of South America, and they invited Venezuela to be a part, which really was just a very big endorsement of the Chavez administration. And then you also recently saw the CUT, which is the main labor, the large, very, very large member
Deborah,
of the Labor Federation of Brazil endorsing the president, and just lots and lots of international solidarity happening.
Well, great, Deborah. Again, the number, again, is 202-347-8081 or www.veninfo.org to get a hold of Deborah James and the Venezuela Information Office. Thank you for giving us your time.
Thank you.